That's Max Roach and Abby Lincoln, Aminata Moseka, with Triptych, Prayer, Protest, Peace. It's from the classic 1960 jazz album, We Insist. Max Roach died on August 16, 2007, at the age of 83. Abby Lincoln, Aminata Moseka, died on August the 14th in 2010, at the age of 80. They were married to each other from 1962 to 1970. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. On September 11th, 2010, Americans came to know terror, and it came from the sky. In New York City, American Airlines Flight 11 and United Airlines Flight 175 screamed toward and then exploded into the World Trade Center's North and South Towers. The 110-story buildings collapsed within 2 hours. In Arlington, Virginia, American Airlines Flight 77 plowed into the Pentagon, destroying a sizable portion of the building that houses the Department of Defense. And in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, United Airlines Flight 93 crashed into a field after passengers helped abort an intended hit on the White House. 19 alleged Al-Qaeda terrorists had hijacked the 4 commercial airliners after departing from 3 East Coast airports and used the planes as weapons of mass destruction, official reports said. The immediate body count was high and related damage extensive. Apart from the 19 hijackers, 2,977 people, including 343 firefighters and 72 law enforcement officers, were killed, and property and infrastructure damage was then estimated at $10 billion. Official investigations concluded that the attacks were carried out by Islamic terrorists on orders of Osama bin Laden, who had vowed vengeance against the United States for its military aggression in the Middle East, its leadership role in the Persian Gulf War, and its support for Israel. The targets were chosen for their symbolic value, the reports generally agreed. Like most Americans, Richard Gage felt a deep sorrow in the aftermath of the attacks. But official explanations about the attack on the World Trade Center and how and why the Twin Towers collapsed just did not square with his professional training and experience as an accomplished architect. He found he was not alone. A growing number of architects and engineers have openly challenged the credibility of the government's reports. They are demanding new, totally transparent investigations into the 9/11 attacks, and especially the attack on the World Trade Center. I spoke with Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, earlier this week, as the nation observes the 14th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. It was an enlightening conversation, to say the least. Take a listen.
Gage, AIA, is a San Francisco Bay Area architect and member of the American Institute of Architects. He's the founding member of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Mr. Gage became interested in researching the destruction of the World Trade Center high-rises after hearing about it on a radio program by David Ray Griffin in 2006, and launched his own quest for the truth about the 9/11 attacks. AE911 Truth now numbers more than 2,300 architects and engineers, and they're demanding a new investigation into the destruction of all three World Trade Center high-rise buildings. And I thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to be here with you.
Oh, thanks so much. Well, let's start with the obvious implication here, 14 years later, and the association of which you are a founding member is insisting on a new investigation into the destruction of three World Trade Center high-rise buildings. That means you had some trouble with the many investigations that have been conducted, including the, quote, official ones, unquote.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And we have got to get to the bottom of this. 8 years ago, I was shocked to learn that there was even alternative theories as to what brought these towers down, much less credible evidence, scientific forensic evidence that we've not seen in the mainstream media, we've not seen in the official NIST reports. NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, was tasked with explaining these high-rise collapses, all three of them, as you mentioned. And they omit most of the relevant evidence, including hundreds and hundreds of witnesses of explosions. And this third tower that came down in 7 seconds at free fall acceleration the afternoon of 9/11 at free fall. This is a symmetrical destruction of a 47-story skyscraper that wasn't hit by an airplane that drops at 5:20 in the afternoon as fast as a bowling ball falling off the side of it. So we have 2,300 architects and engineers demanding a real investigation because the official story tells us that this building came down due to normal office fires. That has never happened in the history of skyscrapers. No skyscrapers collapsed by fire before. So we have three on 9/11. So the evidence I'm looking forward to sharing with you today is really quite overwhelming.
Well, before I get into that, and I can't wait, but I feel compelled to ask you, because you're an architect, and architects are not known, I don't want to be stereotypical here, but architects are not known for getting all involved politically and seeing all kinds of political connections to things. What they do is they build buildings and they study that science, and they're very cut and dried. This bothered you quite a bit. What was it that basically went into your other nerves, not your architect nerves, but your nerves as a citizen?
It was a slow process of kind of awakening to what I was dealing with. This is we have a tiger by the tail here, Utrus. This is not something that, as you mentioned, we normally deal with. We design buildings. We make sure they're built correctly. On 9/11, I saw the towers coming down like others on the TV, and I was just in a state of shock. We'd never seen a skyscraper collapse at all. And these twin towers were completely exploding outward, as we'll talk about. But I couldn't put that together, not for 4 years, until I heard David Ray Griffin on the radio, and I was just literally beside myself. I had to pull my van over after this construction observation meeting that I had listening to him, and really try to digest what he was saying, that this third tower, all 80 columns in this third tower, would have had to have been destroyed or removed all at once in order for this building to come down that fast and straight down. So that means they had to have been removed, which can only be done by explosives. That means someone got into this building to set these explosives. And that's what the evidence shows for the Twin Towers that we'll get to. That means we're talking about a very different scenario than 19 fundamentalist hijackers or whoever sneaking into these buildings unaware by the security company. It would take months of advanced planning and engineering to set these explosives and dozens of operatives. So we're talking about some sort of an inside operation here, which goes far beyond, of course, what we've been led to believe by our government and by the media.
Now, prior to this conclusion of yours, did you suspect that it would take you there? Did you suspect that you will now become, I imagine you to be a pretty straight-laced architect, your basic standard-issue architect, and you're all about building things. And now you find yourself confronting essentially the central question about whether this was the act, a devious act, by a power that you had, a particular relationship with. You part of a so-called democracy, and you believe the government, and there couldn't be anything untoward, not certainly on this scale. So was this your moment of an epiphany about the role of government?
When I realized that our government elected representatives, 535 of them, were not responsive to the growing 9/11 truth movement, numbering millions around the world, and they weren't responding to the petition, which we submitted them when we had 1,000 and then 2,000 architects and engineers demanding a new investigation based on this evidence for controlled demolition, and that the media was actively censoring the story of the crime of the century. We're talking, a massive turnaround in my head. My worldview was really quite shaken, and it took time. I was a Reagan Republican. I was rooting for the Colin Powell, who was making his indisputable case for war against Iraq based on weapons of mass destruction and ties to Osama bin Laden, all of which turned out to be lies. And then looking at who gained, financially from the events of 9/11, and it turns out to be the same people by those who research these matters that own 90% of the mainstream media in this country, owned by just six corporations, who's in turn owned and directed by those who own and direct corporations in the arms industry, the oil industry, the banking industry. So, yeah, this is a huge wake-up call. So I don't trust much of anything now that I hear on the media, the mainstream media, and we have got to, therefore, get the truth out about these events and the implications, of course, of these events with media personalities and efforts such as yours, which is wonderful.
Well, thank you. Could you tell us now, pretending I'm your student in your class, and you are systematically explaining 9/11 from an architect's point of view. What are you, how do you explain what happened, and how you methodically determined what happened?
And I have to tell you, it wasn't me. There were plenty of researchers before 2006 on this collapse of these towers before I became involved. David Ray Griffin is a prominent one, Kevin Ryan, Stephen Jones, Jim Hoffman, many others have been crying foul long before the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth were organized. We start with this third tower because it is so obviously a classic controlled implosion. I mean, it doesn't even look like anything, any kind of a natural collapse. It looks exactly like the old hotels that were brought down in Las Vegas. There's 11 videos that survive from 9/11, and yet this is the third worst structural failure in modern history, and yet most architects and engineers know nothing about it. It hasn't been shown on mainstream television after 9/11, with maybe three exceptions. And this should be the most studied building structural failure in history. And yet I'm just shocked as I go to the American Institute of Architects conventions, and we have a booth, and we tell them and show them Building 7 coming down, which your listeners can watch readily just by Googling Building 7 or World Trade Center 7. You can see it coming down straight down symmetrically in 7 seconds at free fall acceleration. Now, the only buildings that have suffered this fate have been those that were brought down on purpose. And yet NIST completely ignored the hypothesis of explosive controlled demolition in their building report, and they went straight to try to justify destruction by fire. And I mean, quote, normal office fires is their conclusion. And they say that these raging fires on floors 12 and 13 caused the unprecedented complete and total shattering of the steel structure in 7 seconds. So they're clearly stretching to try to control something. This is clearly a cover-up. The evidence shows by FEMA, who NIST took over the investigation from FEMA in 2002, and FEMA had even documented very carefully in their Appendix C of their 2002 building report that there's hot temperature corrosion on the steel, that the steel is turned into Swiss cheese, that it suffered melting and an invasion of molten iron and sulfur. Well, these are the typical byproducts of thermate. Thermate or thermite is a incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. And indeed, there are patented cutter charges which are designed to use thermite or thermate, which issue molten iron in milliseconds cutting through steel. It's much more effective even than typical high-energy explosives like C4 and RDX. But they would provide loud bangs and bright flashes. So in a deceptive controlled demolition, which this clearly is, the perpetrators would have wanted to have avoided the dead giveaway that this building was brought down by typical explosives. They wanted us to look at some other cause, and that cause was these fires. But the fires were only few, scattered, and far between. In fact, they were out over an hour. They were burned out on the 12th and 13th floor an hour before this building came down. And yet NIST claims that those fires were causing thermal expansion of these long-span beams, which causes a successive series of failures inside the building. But none of that could have happened because this building is fireproofed, and there's only enough fuel in this building to burn 20 minutes in a given area. So there's a whole number of reasons their theory makes no sense, and the photographic and video evidence of the fires show that they were out on that floor where they postulate the cause of the initiation of collapse.
But how do you feel so confident transferring that theory about how Building 7 collapsed to how the Twin Towers also collapsed.
Well, it's not really a transfer, other than if we know we were lied about Building 7, which came down at 5:20 in the afternoon, 7 hours after the Twin Towers, then we can at least put on our skeptic's hat when we go to look at the official story about the Twin Towers. And in fact, by the way, Building 7, its failure was announced by the BBC 20 minutes before it even happened. They announced the unprecedented collapse of a skyscraper, and they apologized for this grievous error, by the way, citing the confusing events of the day. So there's so many, including the molten iron pouring in the pools of molten iron seen by the first responders, which again is evidence of thermite. All of this evidence supports the hypothesis of controlled demolition. None of it backs up the official story. So we've got to have some reason for skepticism here, because Building 7 was a part of the conspiracy. No matter how you look at 9/11, it was a conspiracy, either the official conspiracy with 19 fundamentalist hijackers, or the conspiracy of somebody getting into these buildings and setting explosives. In the case of the Twin Towers, we were told that the upper portion of this giant building, the 15 stories, in the case of the North Tower, the fires weakened the steel. The steel gave way, and the top portion drove the rest of the building down to the ground and then destroyed itself. But all of the evidence conspires against that theory as well. First of all, in the first 4 seconds, we don't see, the witnesses, hundreds of them, hear explosions, like a belt, they describe, all the way around the building, like a belt. And indeed, you can see this on many of the videos quite clearly. And at that point, the upper part destroys itself in the first 4 seconds. Similarly, actually, to Building 7, it's like a miniature controlled demolition for the Phase 1 destruction of both towers. And then, after 4 seconds, there are additional explosions which are hurling 4-ton structural steel sections laterally, landing 600 feet in every direction. They're thrown out of the towers at 60 miles an hour. These are clocked by physicists. This is a lateral ejection. Gravity works downward. We're told this is a gravitational collapse or a pancaking collapse. We'd expect in such a pile of 110 floors mangled at the base of each of these towers. That's not what we see. There's a two-story pile of core columns, perimeter columns, miscellaneous metal down there. Where is the 90,000 tons of concrete flooring that was in this building? Well, it's being pulverized in midair to a fine powder before it ever reaches the base. There's very, very little concrete down at the base. It's spread river to river across lower Manhattan in a 4-inch thick blanket. And these particles are 100 microns. It's very finely pulverized, as is the metal decking in which the concrete was poured originally. 220 acres of metal decking is missing, because each of these floors are an acre in size. So we'd expect 220 acres of stacked floors on these buildings. So that's missing. So what's found in the dust? Well, at the base of the piles, what they do find, again, is pools of molten iron. They call it molten steel usually, because they just didn't know. The first responders, structural engineers, iron workers, all talking about all of this molten metal seen actually pouring out of the South Tower 10 minutes prior to its collapse. This is incredible, because they know that office fires don't melt steel, and yet there's all this molten steel, which is very well documented not only in the Appendix C of FEMA, their 2002 report at Building 7, but documented by the U.S. Geological Survey, which finds billions and billions of molten iron spheres in all the World Trade Center samples, dust samples that they were doing toxicological studies on. And this is evidence of molten iron. They have no idea where they came from. They don't even speculate. But they say it's a signature component of the World Trade Center dust. In fact, it's not even World Trade Center dust unless it has all of these unknown origin of molten iron droplets, the diameter of a human hair, most of them. Very, very fine. So how would those have been created? Well, if you had thermite cutter charges in the columns and beams in the building, and then under explosive conditions, the byproduct of that thermite being liquid molten iron, elemental iron, not molten steel, it would aerosolize and like droplets out of a spray bottle. It would atomize and in the case of molten iron, cool and fall. And this is the reasonable explanation of the toasting, if you will, of the tops of all these vehicles down at ground level, falling molten iron droplets. So it all makes sense. In fact, there's a small team of scientists led by Niels Harrit in Copenhagen, which finds in the four independently collected samples that they analyzed, small red-gray chips. And the red side of these chips is composed of fascinatingly small iron oxide and aluminum particles, which are 1,000 times smaller than the diameter of the human hair. These are nanoscale, nanoparticles of the ingredients of thermite, iron oxide and aluminum powder. They should not be there. And they're set in an organic bed of oxygen, silica, and carbon, which is an organic material expands when it ignites or explodes. And it causes the explosive force, actually, in TNT. So here's a fairly typical incendiary thermite, which is engineered to become very high-tech, a nanothermite or super thermite, as some of the research that's come out has labeled it. And it's made not in a cave in Afghanistan. This is a very, very high-tech material made only in the most advanced defense contracting laboratories. In fact, when the scientists heated these small red-gray chips up, they ignite. And what do they produce when they ignite? Some iron microspheres, the same iron microspheres found by officials in all the World Trade Center dust. So we, in fact, know where those iron microspheres came from and that this is a completely consistent, internally corroborated set of evidence that could actually put a lot of people away for mass murder and treason.
Wow, this is some heavy stuff that you're saying here. Let me ask you, you and the Organization of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth no doubt have had access to the blueprints of the building, the design of the building, and so for the materials used in the building. And no doubt you have had an opportunity to study how these materials were likely to perform even in an extreme situation of the kind of attack sustained on September 11th, 2001. To your mind, based on a review of the materials that and the design of the building, of the buildings, I should say, how they collapsed, was that consistent with the materials and the design of the building?
No. The materials, we're talking 100,000 tons of structural steel in each of these towers, that even NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, claims that did its job. The building was engineered properly. What they say is that the impact of the airplane knocked the fireproofing off, making particularly the long-span, lightweight steel trusses in the floors vulnerable to the fires. And so that's where they highlight their theory of column failure, where these trusses, they claim, sagged and pulled in the exterior columns, causing them to buckle, causing this upper section to then, with its massive weight, drive the rest of the building down. So none of this could have happened because there's no additional lateral force, or extremely little, due to sagging trusses. And so they could not have pulled the columns in. So even in NIST's computer analysis, trying to prove their theory, they had to force every one of those 230 columns around the building to fail by applying a 5,000-pound artificial load. So in their computer model, they were able to get the building to fail, but it never would have otherwise. In fact, something else caused those columns to fail, and clearly because the antenna of the North Tower is seen dropping a half a second prior to the overall building, it's very evident that the core columns were designed, intended to fail first. And now what that would have done is pull the trusses as they dipped down along with the antenna, pulling the trusses, and then which in turn pulled the perimeter columns. So there's explanations for there's explanations for what really happened, and most of them involve the use of explosives for which we have the scientific forensic evidence.
Well, immediately after the attack, the entire area was declared, martial law was declared for the entire area. I was one of the people affected by it. Our radio station was at 120 Wall Street, several blocks away, but the entire area was under martial law. It was perhaps one of the largest crime scenes that we had ever seen. And so access to this area was extremely limited. In fact, we were ordered to vacate the building. I was wondering, how did you ever get this organization or any other organization that you know that could have done an independent or a corroborative study? Was any independent entity given access to the site directly so that they can collect samples and conduct their own parallel investigation?
Well, there was two that I'm aware of. One was, and I don't know that any of them are independent, but FEMA, the American Society of Civil Engineers, came up with volunteers who did the initial study, and they were given only $600,000 to study the... Actually, they had no money. It was FEMA who was given $600,000. The ASCE volunteers were complaining all the time about lack of access to the steel. The steel was being systematically shipped to the landfill and then immediately put on barges set for China for recycling. So 98% of the steel was shipped away and destroyed within weeks after 9/11. Building 7, in fact, was completely shipped away within a few weeks, and depriving structural engineers and forensic engineers of the typical means of forensic analysis used to understand structural failures. This was decried by Bill Manning of Fire Engineering Magazine, the editor, saying the destruction and removal of evidence must stop immediately. And it did not, of course. So there was another independent engineer, Abulhazen Astani Azul from UC Berkeley, who was working under a National Science Foundation grant to study the steel. And he himself documented that he saw melting of girders at the World Trade Center. So he's a direct witness of molten iron, which, of course, can't happen by normal office fires or jet fuel. Even jet fuel only burns 600 degrees, according to one of the manufacturers. In open air, jet fuel burns it's basically kerosene. It doesn't burn hot in open air. Thermite produces temperatures at 40,000 degrees. In fact, concrete was even melted in addition to steel. And, the office fires can only get to be about a third of those temperatures. So, again, we have proof, complete proof of the hypothesis of controlled demolition by incendiaries, and also explosives, given the massive lateral displacement of these huge structural steel sections weighing 4 tons, landing 600 feet, impaling themselves in the buildings around. Also, we find 700 bone fragments a half an inch long on top of the skyscraper across the street from World Trade Center 2, I believe it was. This is absolutely incredible. How do they get so small? How do they get on top of that skyscraper? I mean, the body parts of people were also distributed up to 600 feet in every direction. Most of them are not down at the bottom at all, which is what you'd expect in a gravitational collapse.
And other than your organization, which is pursuing a new investigation, a reopened investigation, are there other professional groups basically endorsing the same demand in the United States and outside of the United States?
There are all kinds of people with all kinds of questions, but at organizational levels, such as the American Institute of Architects, of which I'm a member, and the American Society of Civil Engineers, these organizations are represented by the richest people in the world and corporations that build skyscrapers, for instance. They are not in a position to challenge the existing statements and also the existing worldview. The paradigm is not ready to shift yet at that scale. So while we have thousands of individuals signed on to our petition demanding a new investigation, we have not been able to successfully penetrate these other technical associations. Although we're at the AIA conference every year, we're going to structural conferences this year, we're educating people at a kind of a grassroots level, and I've given presentations around the world now 400 times in 37 foreign countries and 85 American cities to groups of 100 to 2,000, and we always do a show of hands before and after. And it's dramatic. Most everybody, and oftentimes everybody in the room, will end up agreeing with the evidence and that we need a real investigation.
I'd like to pursue a bit more the political connection here. Right after the attack, in fact, on November the 27th, 2002, President George W. Bush named Henry Kissinger to chair up the independent investigation into the attack. It was called the 9/11 Commission. Was that an indicator to you about the significance of any inquiry into, any official inquiry into the 9/11 attack that was likely to be produced through that commission?
Well, first of all, it took the Bush administration a year to even form the commission, and they did so under heavy pressure from members of Congress and the family members of the victims. When they did, they, according to the commissioners themselves, said they were set up to fail. They didn't have adequate funding. They didn't have adequate time. They weren't able to use the subpoena power that they were theoretically empowered with. There's all kinds of problems associated. In fact, their own attorney said there was an agreement not to tell the American people the truth. That's John Farmer in the ground. I forget the name of the book about the 9/11 Commission. So it's a damning indictment against the commission report by the commissioners themselves, which. I guess at this point, trying to cover themselves because the truth is coming out, and they're going to be scurrying like rats, people who are behind the promoting the official story, the perpetrators of these crimes, and the cover-up artists in the media and the government.
Within a month of naming Kissinger, Bush then named Thomas Kane, former governor of the state of New Jersey, to head up the commission. But I'm not aware that the Kane Commission, I shouldn't call it the Kane Commission, it is a 911 commission under Kane, produced any results in terms of addressing specifically the issues of what caused this, how did this, or the concerns of organizations like yours that there may be very different explanations other than what was already in play for the attacks on the World Trade Center.
The Kane Commission let's say that the commission was run by a Bush insider named Philip Zelikow, who had complete control over what was written in the final report, who left out the collapse of the third worst structural failure in modern history, Building 7, which they were tasked with explaining all of the events of 9/11 to the American people. They completely left that collapse out. They said that they were not going to assign blame, so they didn't go looking for what went wrong or who may have been responsible. So they came up with this failure of imagination theory, which is designed to just allow everybody who may have made a mistake to remain in power. Nobody was fired. Philip Zelikow himself, his PhD thesis was in the creation of public myth. So here he's done that beautifully, created a public myth in the 9/11 Commission report, which bears no resemblance to reality, as documented very carefully by Dr. David Ray Griffin in his book, 9/11 Commission, Omissions and Distortions.
But since then, what has been the response by Congress? One would imagine that, okay, if we didn't get it officially from the president's executive order, if you will, certainly Congress would be willing to take a look at this these events, because it's now the Pentagon, attack on the Pentagon, an aborted attack on the White House, and the two-plane attack on the World Trade Center complex, that this would be a matter of national priority, and therefore the Congress should get its act together and launch a very thorough investigation, because this was considered the most outrageous attack on American soil. So what was the result of any congressional investigation?
Well, the result was the 9/11 Commission report, essentially, and the 9/11 Commission hearings before the 9/11 Commission was formed was put forth by Bob Graham, senator, who is now one of the leaders in trying to expose a key piece of evidence called the 28 pages, which was illegally redacted. The complete 28 pages was illegally redacted by the Bush administration. And so there are 17 senators and congresspersons who are now leading the effort to force the Obama administration to declassify this material, which is not a matter of national security, which is the only excuse you can use to classify material, apparently. So this is an extraordinary update by many on the commissions in the 9/11 congressional hearing themselves, led now by Rand Paul and many others. So what we're told is that these implicate foreign governments, not just Al-Qaeda hijackers. So this is a very, very important piece to the puzzle. But it is irrelevant when you're looking at the scientific forensic evidence of the destruction of the towers, which is very clear evidence of an inside operation, wherein we must have an investigation, starting with the security company, under whose noses would have to have been brought tons of, maybe 50 tons of high-tech nanothermite and thermite and high-energy explosives into the building. So, you know, who was in charge of Securicom, Stratasec, the security company there? People have done research on this. It's pretty fascinating. Why was there an elevator modernization, the largest one in history, going on the 9 months prior to 9/11? Well, that certainly could have given operatives the cover they needed to plant and place these explosives in the core of the building, which is right adjacent, these columns right adjacent to the elevator shafts in the building. So we certainly want an investigation of Ace Elevator, who came out of nowhere to secure these contracts, which should have gone to Otis Elevator, the existing maintainer of the elevators and their original installer. Ace Elevator went out of business right away after 9/11. So there's lots of finger-pointing and targets of investigations that could be done.
In the community of people demanding independent investigations, what is emerging as the dominant theory or theories as to why these attacks occurred and who did them?
Well, what criminal investigators and journalists should be doing but are not is answering the question, who benefited? Who follow the money? There's lots of money to be followed. These corporations who own industries, corporations in these industries who own the mainstream media, in the arms industry, the oil industry, the banking industry, the insurance industry, all profited enormously from the events of 9/11. The goals were achieved, which were written down in the Project for a New American Century website, which is the statement of the neocons who came into power with the Bush administration. Regional hegemony in the Middle East. Dominance, total spectrum dominance in space, a vast increase of the military budget. These are all goals which were achieved after 9/11. And this $4.5 trillion global war on terror is enriching nobody, not you and me, but the arms industry, certainly, and corporations and people who loan other people money, bankers, and so forth. We have lost our civil liberties. We have traded them for security. So we've been scammed. We've been provided a problem, and that is 9/11, a classic false flag operation where one country attacks itself, blames it on another country as an excuse to go to war, which has happened, by the way, throughout history, starting every war, which declassified documents show with respect to the Northwoods operation, for instance, an excuse to go to war with Cuba, the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which never happened, which now we've lost 58,000 soldiers in Vietnam, World War I, II, Spanish-American War with the sinking of the Maine. It goes on and on and on. This is classic. This is how governments and industries manipulate their people to take away their rights. So we have now, any of us can be arrested and put in jail without a right to a lawyer, a trial, a jury, held indefinitely. We can even be assassinated for being accused of being associated with terrorism, which is not even defined. So we've got some real problems. We've got to find out what's happened in this country, and we've got to take back our power. And but we have to wake up. I think 9/11 is a huge wake-up call for us because the evidence is so clear. A lot of mistakes were made in the execution of these demolitions, and anybody who looks at the evidence ends up agreeing with us. So that leaves them wrestling with the unacceptable and inconvenient truth that this was an inside job, and that we have elements very high up in our government and industry that have been taken over. Our government has apparently been hijacked up to very high levels in order to pull this off, which is evidenced by the drills, the false blips on the radar screens that confuse the air traffic controllers, the air drills that sent our fighters in every direction on the morning of 9/11 away from Central Corridor, and on and on and on.
What is Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth? What is on the agenda in the immediate future?
Well, we're going to New York tomorrow, and on the 11th and 12th, we've got a lot of activities that we are excited about, which is kind of ground zero for 9/11 Truth also. A lot of people wake up every year through the dozens or hundreds of activists out in the street outside the National Museum, National 9/11 Museum, with our alternative guide, What You Will Not See in the Museum. So all this evidence we've been discussing, for instance. We will have the filming of the premiere screening of our new film on the evening of 9/11 in New York at 7 p.m., Firefighters, Architects, Engineers Expose 9/11 Myths. That's with Eric Lawyer, who founded Firefighters for 9/11 Truth, now numbering 200 firefighters calling for a new investigation, and myself on stage introducing the film and hosting a discussion afterwards. The next day, that day, we'll also have a press conference on the streets of on the street outside the National 9/11 Museum or outside the New York Times, which we've fortunately succeeded in encouraging our supporters to raise $9,000 for erecting a billboard across the street from the New York Times that challenges them directly, specifically David Sanger, chief editor, who said there he's found no evidence for that anything other than planes brought down these buildings. Of course, okay, then what brought down the third building? You know, we have our evidence highlighted up there, and so that's 40 feet tall right in front of his office. Very exciting opportunity for us. We also have others who are hosting independently an all-day conference the next day, Saturday, September 12th, from 10 to 7 p.m., in which we'll have John Perkins, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, author of that book, and Lance DeHaven Smith, who wrote Conspiracy Theory in America and State Crimes Against Democracy. He'll be there along with several attorneys who will highlight the legal efforts to challenge the official myth and bring to court the forensic evidence that we have. Also a panel of psychologists who will help us understand why it's so difficult for ourselves to receive this information and digest it, and how we can talk to others about it, and why society is so reluctant, even after 14 years now, to come to terms with the truth about what really happened at the World Trade Center.
I want to thank you so much for this incredible instruction today and for sharing your views and information about this incredible event and the impact it has had and continues to have, not just in America, but around the world. Thank you so much, Richard Gage, of the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, for being with us on Lead Stories today.
Thank you, Utris. It's my pleasure and honor, and I'm very grateful to speak to your audience about it.
Stay tuned. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. And you can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me know how this program has resonated with you. I tell you this was quite a bit of information, and we will, of course, be following up with Richard Gage. I want to thank you for joining me today, and know from me it is always a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Tomorrow, it's Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories. Get your brains in gear. Bye-bye. Thank you.